I said, "Maybe I should tell the story." We didn't have all day. Fantasy responded with gestures, jotting specific questions in writing. In the end, she wrote at length. When she finished, she flipped the paper around. I bent over it and read, "I agree. Tell no one. Act as normal as you can. But first things first, you can't rob the Bellissimo. If you're going to rob a casino, rob the slipper, or last resort, or even Hard Rock. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Second, everyone knows Bradley is in Nashville nosing around about a job with Southern Gaming because he's convinced Bex and Quinn are going to grow up to be degenerate gamblers if you stay here one more minute. Forget it, Davis. You'd hate Nashville. You don't even like country music or barbecue, and that's all they have in Nashville. This is your home. Third, you can't put that dog in the show. Look at it. I don't care if it could wag its twiggy tail all the way to the White House gate and pass itself off as Madeleine Albright. Talent is only part of the competition, and that dog's obsession with Madeleine Albright is hardly a talent. Forget it. I'm not sure it even is a dog. It might be a ferret. Finally, and most importantly, get the witch's phone and call the preacher. Stop texting him back with glory hallelujahs. He'll answer because he'll think it's the witch calling. Just level with him. Tell him you know everything and you're working on the money, but you want Meredith and Bree's dog and a nice hotel, not stuffed in his ratty camper under lock and key. And tell him you want open communication with her. Tell him nothing happens unless Meredith convinces you she's going through the procedure by choice, with no undue influence. Do you have any Benadryl? I'm positive this is a spell your witch cast on me, but on the off chance it's not, I need an antihistamine. Either that or I'm going to have to go to a doc in a box for a shot. I can feel my lips getting bigger." I said, "Fantasy, she's not a witch. There's no such thing." Vree said, "She most certainly is." "Vree," I said, "stop with the witch business. Just stop." The house phone ringing scared us to death. We were so on edge, with Madeleine Albright yammering in the background, the unexpected noise almost did us in. It was the bearded and pierced housekeepers. It had been well over a half hour. I'd forgotten all about them. They called to say, "No Bootsy." The bonus room was empty, and they didn't jump off the car in the driveway because there was no car in the driveway. No woman, no car, sorry. Having held it together since the morning before when I realized my sister wasn't coming, I gave up. I was terrified for my sister. I missed my husband. I missed my daughters, who I hadn't seen or held in hours. Bree wouldn't shut up. Fantasy had balloons for lips, and I had to rob the silver slipper. I'd saddled myself with a Democrat dog that smelled like carnage and hated me. I was a nervous wreck from living on coffee, and I had to wear horse clothes and judge a dog show that night. Now Bootsy was gone. It was too much. I laid my head down on my kitchen table and was on the verge of coming undone. A slip of paper joined my pity party. On it, Fantasy had written, "Davis, the preacher isn't going to touch a hair on Meredith's head. He needs her, and the witch is still in the bonus room. I have no idea where my car is, but the witch is there. She hid somewhere, and the housekeepers didn't look hard enough. Come on, and we'll go flush her out. Do you have any way, shape, or form of antihistamine?" Then, patting her chest, Fantasy said, "I'll help you." A very good thing, because I needed help. Fantasy's lips still took up half her face, but the bottle of children's Benadryl she chugged reduced her swollen tongue enough for her to speak somewhat clearly. We were stuffed in the cab of her husband Reggie's beat-up work truck, Fantasy driving, Vree riding shotgun, me bouncing off both from the middle seat. If the Benadryl is working, Fantasy, that means you've had an allergic reaction to something. Bootsy didn't voodoo you.
You two need to get on the same page, Fantasy said. Is she a witch or isn't she?
She is.
Vree leaned past me.
One time she turned the water black. For 3 days, all the water in Pineapple was as black as ink. Our grocery store, the pig, ran out of bottled water, and it was all Bootsy's fault.
It was not, I said. It was manganese. Vree said,
it was Bootsy.
What is manganese?
Fantasy took a right off Beach Boulevard. We were less than a mile from her house. Manganese is like iron, I said, and like iron, it can make its way into a water supply from groundwater runoff. When it does, the water turns black, which was what happened. Vree said,
also, if a witch puts a spell on the water, it turns black.
We passed a Coast Electric power truck, a big truck, a bucket truck, and two men were sky high in the bucket repairing a transformer. I said, there's your power flickering on and off. It was a transformer, not Bootsy.
It was Bootsy if Bootsy was the one who blew the transformer,
Vree said.
Do you remember when Orange Bennett cut line in front of her at the Gas and Go, and 10 minutes later he broke out in hives all over his body, even his privates?
I did remember that. Orange wore nothing but Wolverine boots, calamine lotion, and a spray-painted wooden sandwich board with Bootsy Howard is a witchy witch on the front and Burn Bootsy Howard at the stake on the back for a month. And the month was January. When the tip of his nose turned black, Daddy told him if he caught him walking up and down Banana Street one more time wearing nothing but his sandwich board, he'd lock him up. Free speech was one thing. Frostbite was another.
Why are so many people in Pineapple named after foods?
Fantasy turned into the driveway and drove past the house.
Orange, as in juice?
I didn't have time to answer. His daddy was a Tennessee fan. Before Fantasy said,
where in the world is my car?
The housekeepers were right. The car was gone. The garage was still there and so far so good. No shooting flames, no bats, no National Guard. Fantasy shifted the truck into park and killed the engine.
Where's my car?
Maybe Bootsy witched it somewhere,
Vree said.
Where would she have witched my car to, Vree?
Let's go in and ask her, I said.
What if she's really not there?
Vree asked. She's there, I said, and if by some chance she's not, surely she left us a few clues. She wasn't there, and there were no clues. Clues? No. A solid black standard poodle guarding a dead body? Yes. 10. Fantasy and I opened our mouths at the same time. In all fairness, Fantasy couldn't close her mouth because of her lips, still bee-stung swollen by a whole hive of bees, to tell Vree not to touch anything. But we didn't need to. Vree swooned again. We were 3 for 3. She hit the floor yesterday when we shot Bootsy with the tranquilizer gun. Then again that morning when she connected the bloody dots between Meredith and Green Gully, and just then when she realized the woman in the easy chair behind the big black dog was dead. The dog was glad to see us. It rushed us, clearly seeking help. I tried to calm it. It tried to pull me by the sleeve. I know. I patted the huge fluff ball on its head. I know. Fantasy checked the body for a pulse. She shook her head.
Davis, she's still warm.
I stepped around the Eden kitchenette bar and rifled through the drawers for something to use for a cold compress for Vree. Vree needed to buck up. There were no pools of blood, no gaping wounds, no signs of trauma. If it weren't for the woman's gray pallor and glazed dead stare, she might be asleep. I found a saint's t-shirt. I dragged a moaning Vree farther from the body, put a throw pillow under her head, then positioned the wet t-shirt across her brow, while Fantasy poked the dead woman with a rolled magazine. It looked like a gamer magazine. "What are you doing, Fantasy?" She was poking a dead woman with a magazine, was what she was doing. "No purse," she said. "No keys. No nothing except a dog leash. I'm seeing if she has anything in her pockets." "What should we do here?" she asked. "Call the police?"
"And say what?" I asked. "Our witchy prisoner escaped, and in her place we have a dead woman we don't know."
She patted her swollen lips and thought about it. She could see where calling the police too soon might not be the best idea. She stepped past the dead woman, around the corner to the small room with the bunk beds, then I heard her tapping.
"What are you doing?"
She reappeared.
"I turned the air down to popsicle."
"Good idea." We searched high and low, over and under, above and beyond, for Bootsy Howard or any sign of her, and the only thing we found was her tapestry bag full of witch clothes. The housekeepers were right. No Bootsy, no sign of her, and not a single clue. Our search stopped where it started, in front of the dead woman.
"What happened to her?" I whispered.
"I don't know,"
Fantasy whispered back.
"Should we pray?" I asked.
"Yes, Davis, we should pray. But at this point, I think we should pray for ourselves."
"Her necklace," I whispered.
"I know."
Fantasy crossed herself. We stared at the pendant around the dead woman's neck. It was a cameo in an antique silver setting, a hummingbird fluttering above morning glories on a powder blue stone. I wasn't even Catholic, but crossed myself, too. The big black dog between us, paying his own respects, woofed, snapping us out of our death trance and back into the here and now.
"Do you want the dog or Vree?"
Fantasy looked from one to the other, clearly not wanting either.
"I'll take Vree."
It was a morbidly quiet ride out of Fantasy's subdivision, other than the dog barking at thin air. The plan had been, once we returned to the Bellissimo with our Bootsy leverage, to get Preacher Gully on the phone and hammer out a deal. We had no Bootsy. We had no leverage, so we had no plan. A dead woman in Fantasy's bonus room, another dog, a missing car, but no plan. We were 3 miles from the Bellissimo, and Vree was coming around. Again.
"This is a real dog."
The real dog was big. Standing, it was 2 feet off the ground. Nose to tail, it was 3 feet long. It weighed maybe 50 pounds, but the real story was the haircut. The trunk of his body and his legs were almost shaved. Everything else was cut into huge, fluffy balls, like pom-poms. His head was a giant pom-pom. It looked like he was wearing pom-pom bracelets above his paws. The tip of his tail was fashioned into another perfect fuzzy ball, and he was getting sand all over the truck.
"The woman had the dog at the beach."
"Clearly, Fantasy." I swiped sand off my leg.
"How did she end up in my bonus room?"
"How did she end up dead?" Vree said.
"This one looks like a dog, acts like a dog, and smells like a dog, in a good way. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean?"
We were stuffed in the cab of a truck with it on a warm April day. The dog was straddling me, his long legs on either side of mine, his head out the window on Vree's side, and Fantasy was trying to drive over his other end. None of us were gagging, so we knew what she meant.
"This guy's fur is like wire."
Vree was petting his head from crown to neck in long, smooth strokes, comforting him and, in the process, comforting herself.
Bubblegum's fur is coarse. I mean, I go through the conditioner like nobody's business, and if I don't brush her out 3 times a day, she gets...
Vree stopped talking for a second. It was glorious.
There's a collar in here.
What? A what? I reached for the dog's neck, too, but didn't find anything but fuzz. Get it.
It's way down in this furball.
Find the hook thing, Fantasy said. Unhook it.
From what?
Vree asked. Unhook its collar. The hook, the clasp, the buckle, whatever. Fantasy moved his tail out of her way. I dove in from underneath. I ran my hands along his chest. Were dogs supposed to have way faster heartbeats than humans? And hit pay dirt. Got it. I held up the second dog collar I'd removed in my life in as many days.
You're so good with dog collars, Davis.
I've been dressing babies for almost 2 years.
Right,
she said.
Baby clothes. Read it.
Fantasy was trying to turn into the bellissimo over the back end of a large dog.
What does it say?
Harley. The engraving was impossibly small. His name is Harley. I held it above his back. There are 3 numbers, short, medium, and long. The short one starts with the letters S and D, no owner's name, and neither of the others look like phone numbers.
SD means he's a service dog, Vree said. That's his service dog number. The other 2 numbers are probably rabies and microchip.
Service dog? What kind of service dog? Fantasy asked.
Is it a police dog?
He didn't look like any police dog I'd ever seen.
There are so many kinds of service dogs, Vree said. There are guide dogs, seizure dogs, autism dogs, diabetic dogs, and emotional support dogs. There are even gluten dogs.
Are you saying this dog has autism? Or he's diabetic? Fantasy asked. How in hell do we take care of a dog with diabetes? I was still nose to collar. Tell us about the microchip. Because that sounded promising. Vree took a deep breath to tell us a long story, and Fantasy stopped her before she could start.
You know what a microchip is, Davis. Finish with the diabetes, Vree. Is the dog diabetic?
She parked at an angle, spreading the truck out over 2 parking spaces and batted Harley's wagging tail out of her face again.
Do we look like we have dog insulin? Where do you even get dog insulin? CVS?
How would Vree know if this dog is diabetic? I asked. And I'm not asking her to explain microchips to me, thank you. I want to know what we're supposed to do with a microchip. I can't see us taking the time to find a dog doctor, dragging in a dog we clearly don't know, and saying, "Scan this dog, please." The vet would be questioned. "Yes, detective, they were here," he'd say. 3 of them, like Mo, Larry, and Curly, and not one of them said a word about a dead woman. Fantasy's face said, "Good point."
You wouldn't believe how many owners don't microchip their pets, Vree said. You'd better believe Bubblicious is microchipped. Of course, I had to turn around and cover my whole head when they shot it in, or I'm squeamish like that.
For real, Vree? Fantasy asked. You're squeamish?
Bubblegum had a microchip, another detail Vree didn't think to tell me the day before when I was desperately trying to locate my sister.
I know,
Vree said.
Go figure.
Vree, you pass out every 10 minutes,
Fantasy said.
We know you're squeamish.
Here's some advice for you. Harley's tail palm hit her in the face again. She swatted.
Don't even think about having kids. You won't be able to take it.
Bree's head dropped.
Let's talk about your dog's microchip later and this dog's microchip now,
Fantasy said.
Can we get information about the dead woman in my bonus room with it? I have a husband, Vree, and 3 sons who'll be home tonight. As in, my husband will park his car in the garage, and I'd like to get the dead body out of the bonus room before he does.
Vree sniffed.
I don't see how the microchip will help you get the dead body out.
Harley barked. Fantasy's car was equipped with Volvo's on-call service. Bootsy, as far as we knew, was still alive and had taken off in the Volvo. More evidence, she was just mean and spooky. If she were a real witch, she wouldn't have carjacked the Volvo. She'd have gone to the broom closet for transportation. Witch or not, we'd find her first. Kinda needed to know where she was before I got on the phone with Gully and started making demands. How does Bootsy Howard know how to hotwire a car? Fantasy and I were in my office. Vree was on dog duty in the living room.
I left the keys in it,
she said. Why would you leave the keys in it?
My plan was to send a tow truck after it, Davis. You have to leave the keys if you want it towed.
How in the world did Bootsy start the car if you couldn't?
Maybe she witched it.
Surely not. Call Volvo.
We can't call Volvo,
Fantasy said. Why not?
Because when an owner asks Volvo to find their car, Volvo assumes it's for no good reason. On call will only give the information to the police. The car owner has to get the information from the police.
Yeah, that wouldn't work. Plan B, I said. We'll leave Volvo out of it and track down the car ourselves. What's your VIN number?
Are you kidding me, Davis? Who knows their VIN number?
Your lips aren't big. In the course of finding a dead body, losing a car, and welcoming a second dog into my home, Fantasy's lips had returned to normal.
My iPad.
What?
My iPad is in the car. We can track the iPad.
5 minutes later, we had a bead on Bootsy. She was near the Ponchatoula, Louisiana exit on I-12, pointed straight for Baton Rouge, on her way to Houston, no doubt. Which meant she'd made her escape after Fantasy left and before the hairy-pierced housekeepers arrived. We didn't know where or how the dead woman fit in, but we knew the timing was tight. The 3 events had to have happened almost simultaneously. Had Bootsy Howard actually killed someone? And if so, who had she killed? The website was www.petmicrochiplookup.org. I typed the 15-digit number in the box, hit enter, and the next screen was a search engine asking for the microchip's manufacturer, which I didn't know. I searched for pet microchip manufacturers, thinking there'd be 3, and as it turned out, there were 300, at least. The only way to the microchip registration information, and thus the dead woman's name, was from a veterinarian or by loading microchip manufacturers into the search engine until it found a match, which we didn't have time for.
Is Vree good with computers?
Fantasy asked.
Put her on it.
Then who will watch the dogs?
Not I.
We looked at each other over Bootsy's phone, the lifeline to my sister.
I turned the air down to 40, Davis. The dead woman isn't going to get any deader. Put the witch, the dead woman, and the microchip business on hold and make the call.
She pushed Bootsy's phone an inch. While it was never a good idea to put a dead body on hold, I couldn't take it one more minute, and with shaking hands, I clicked the sharing and caring icon on Bootsy's phone and found Gully's number. It rang 3 times.
"Sister Bootsy?"
he answered. "Wrong, Gully. It's Sister Davis, and I want to talk to my sister." We slept in my bedroom that night. All over my bedroom. Bexley and Quinn had been toddling their way into our bed 2 or 3 nights a week since they graduated from baby beds to big girl beds. When Bradley traveled, I didn't want to sleep alone, and chances were high the girls would wander in anyway, so we skipped the preamble and had all-girls slumber parties. The girls were sweet little sleepers. Wiggly, I woke up feeling like I'd slept with baby octopuses, but warm and cuddly, too. Fantasy's oldest son's basketball team won in the loser's bracket, whatever that meant, and the last time she heard from Reggie, he said the wild card game would end too late for him to drive home. They'd see her tomorrow, unless the boys won again, in which case they'd advance to the finals and see her whenever. Hopefully, we'd have the dead woman out by whenever. The dead woman was why Fantasy didn't want to go home. I couldn't say I blamed her. I slept on my side of the bed. She slept on Bradley's, with Bex and Quinn between us. Harley, the big black poodle, slept at the foot of the bed. Princess wasn't sleeping in her pop-and-play beside the chaise lounge. Vree was on the chaise lounge. One would think 2 20-month-old girls would keep the room awake, but having missed their afternoon naps because they were having too much fun with July, then the excitement of getting dressed up and going to the first round of the dog show competition to sit on the front row with Aunt Vree while I and Jodpers and Spurs passed out Bianca-worthy low scores at the judge's table, had worn them out. They fell asleep before their curls hit the pillow. It was Princess who kept us up. She was the noisiest dog in the world. Could she not get comfortable?
"Toss her another thumbprint cookie, Bree,"
Fantasy whispered.
"She's eaten a whole box already," Bree whispered back. "Have you seen her stomach? Listen to this."
It sounded like Vree thumped a watermelon.
"This dog will blow up if I feed it one more bite."
"Princess," Fantasy loud whispered. "You see, Harley, this is how dogs do it. They lay down and go to sleep. They don't gnaw on themselves and whine all night." I said, "If we start talking about Harley, we'll never get to sleep." I said, "You two put pillows over your heads and try. We have a big day tomorrow."
"We're going to have plenty of time to sleep when No Hair finds out we have this black dog," Fantasy said, "because we'll be unemployed."
Vree said,
"I wish we could call Meredith again."
We'd talked to Meredith 4 times. Twice at length, twice just to hear her voice. "We'll call her again in the morning, Vree," I whispered.
"Right after we get the dead body out of my bonus room."
Fantasy spoke the words over my dreaming babies. I would talk to Bradley early tomorrow. He'd call before his symposium day started. I planned on telling him to find us a house in Nashville, then buy it, then move in. The girls and I would meet him there at the end of the week. After I helped hide the body of Harley Al Abbasov's caregiver and returned him to his owner, Hiridi Al Abbasov, oil baron, blind from birth, and my neighbor. Hiridi Al-Abbasov was the VIP next door to me on the 29th floor in the Jay Leno suite. His beloved dog, Harley, a first-time contestant in the Southern Canine Association's competition, was missing from the Bellissimo Resort and Casino. His beloved dog, Harley's caregiver, was missing too. Al-Abbasov's secretary and spokesman, Rod J. Sebastian, announced Sheikh Al-Abbasov was offering a $1 million reward, the exact amount of money we needed. $500,000 for information leading to the whereabouts of Harley's caregiver, 62-year-old Doris Harrington, and another $500,000 for the safe return of his seeing-eye dog, Harley, who was sleeping on my feet. 11. It was a Bellissimo housekeeping supervisor who innocently let me know just how much trouble I was in. At first, it didn't register how bad things were, because I finally spoken to my sister. I had to go through Pastor Gully to get to Meredith, and my first conversation with him the day before had gone as expected. He hung up on me. As if that would make me go away. I dialed him back immediately. He didn't answer.
"Give him a minute," Fantasy said. "He's processing."
A calling all cars email from Bellissimo Security hit my inbox with a click, and at the same time a notification flashed across my phone. I ignored both. I was so far past ready to make contact with my sister. "Give it up, Gully," I texted. "I know where you are, and I know Green is sick. I want to help you, but only if you let me talk to Meredith." I put the phone on my desk where Fantasy and I could watch it. We could hear Vree in the living room talking the dog's ears off. 5 minutes later, nothing back from Gully, I texted again. "Your brother has idiopathic thrombotic demyelinating polyneuropathy. He needs my sister's plasma, and you need $1 million to pay for the procedure." "I know all this, Gully. Let me talk to her." More clicks and Bellissimo notifications on both mine and Fantasy's phones. Something was going on in the hotel or the casino. Something urgent. Finally, Bootsy's phone dinged. "Where is Sister Bootsy?" I shot back. "I'll tell Meredith. Give her the phone. Let me talk to her." From Gully. Who else knows? Me. No one. Let me talk to Meredith. Gully. Who told you? Me. I figured it out. I want to talk to my sister. My thumbs were shaking. I dropped the phone. Fantasy's nose was to hers. What did people do before smartphones?
Davis?
She looked up.
We have a problem.
Bootsy's phone rang on the word problem. I grabbed it. Gully. There was a pause, then a breath. A breath I'd known all my life. My sister said,
Davis?
There were tears. In the end, she said,
all I have to do is lay on a table with a needle in my arm to save a man's life. His whole life, Davis. You and Daddy are in the life-saving business. Look at the people you've dragged out of burning homes and wrecked cars. Look at Daddy's long career. How many lives has he turned around? And even what you do now, you help. You make a difference. I don't like how Gully ambushed me either, and Gina is about to drive me up the wall. But the fact remains, I have a chance to help, to save a life. If you ask me, mine isn't the hard job. Yours is, because you're the only person any of us knows with access to that much money. Money Gully plans to pay back. His plan is for every penny of tithes and offerings for the rest of his life to go to you. They're going to sell Jesus water to pay you back.
So it's more like borrow the money if he can figure out how to loan it to him, because Davis Green is dying. It was while I was on the phone with my sister that Atlanta oil sheik Hiridi Al-Abbasov reported his black standard poodle and the poodle's caregiver missing. With that, things went from bad to worse. Much worse. We were harboring a wanted dog. Wanted to the tune of $1 million. The exact amount of money we needed. And all this went down at exactly 3 o'clock. Which was exactly when the front door burst open and the pitter-patter of two pairs of mini Melissa Mary Jane flats raced my way. Then my daughters dove into my lap. Bex said, "Mama, mama, mama." While Quinn said, "Dog, dog, dog." They pulled me into the living room to show me not one but two dogs. I held them back a very safe distance. "I know." Harley, the nice dog with the crazy haircut, who we'd just learned belonged to the blind bazillionaire next door, wanted no part of Bex and Quinn. He eyed them curiously, then quietly stepped behind Vree to hide. Princess, the yellow-eyed terror, sensing a change in the air, looked up from Madeline Albright. She sniffed. She stood and turned in circles, accidentally stepping on the laptop and quieting Madeline, a relief, until she found what she was looking for. She marched in our direction, then pressed a rolling yellow eye against the mesh of the playpen wall and zeroed in on my girls, who I had a firm grip on. Princess did a little dance, whined, and yipped a greeting. She stretched as tall as she could, her long black fingernails curling over the padded edge of the playpen. She plopped her head between her paws. Then she smiled. I'd never seen Princess smile. I'm not sure I'd ever seen any dog smile. Her head tipped back, her mouth dropped open, she bared her crooked, nubby teeth, then her black tongue flopped out of the left side of her mouth. Her eyes lit up, the black one and the yellow one. She pointed the yellow one at Bex and Quinn. Then the back half of her started twitching. Furiously. Princess was wagging her body. From her thick neck down, she wagged her oddly shaped middle, whimpering eagerly the entire time. Black tongue flapping. Bex and Quinn strained against me. No way. I held on tight.
"Would you look at that?"
Fantasy said.
"Princess likes little people."
I closed the space between Bex, Quinn, and Princess in minute increments, an inch at a time. Even at that, it wasn't long until their noses were pressed against one side of the playpen and hers against the other. Bex and Quinn didn't judge. They were too young to see, care about, or smell anything different about Princess. To them, she had no disadvantages. They saw little dog, and they wanted little dog.
"Honestly, Davis?" Vree said. "Princess loves them. It's like she speaks their language. I can tell you right now she won't hurt them."
She, who wouldn't hurt them, started showing off for them. She rolled over, begged, played dead, and did a full backflip. They roared. We all did. Meredith was trapped in Houston. We had a dead body on ice in Fantasy's bonus room. Bootsy was missing, and we were harboring an oil sheik's seeing-eye dog. We had no plan, solid or otherwise, to scare up $1 million for Green Gully's procedure, and there we stood, laughing at my girls, who were laughing at a crazy dog who was laughing back. It was like a miracle and a horror movie at the same time. Fantasy broke the spell when she said,
"We need to call housekeeping."
"Why?" I asked.
"We can't take this one out."
She pointed at Harley, still watching from his safe place behind Vree. "Take him out is exactly what we need to do," I said. "We need to take him out, down the hall, and return him to his owner."
"You think? What are we going to say when his blind owner asks where the caregiver is? Are you going to tell him she's dead, or am I?"
"Can we just say we found his dog and get the $500,000? Vree asked. "Then we'd only need the other $500,000, which, when I say it out loud, sounds crazy. I mean, I've never even seen $1 million in my life, or a $500,000 either. I can't believe I'm even talking about that much money. How would we get it here? I mean, would it be a check or cash? If he gives us cash, would we need a suitcase or a forklift? I have no idea what $1 million looks like. If you add up all the money I've ever seen, like seen in real life with my own eyes, it probably wouldn't even be $10,000. I'll tell you what I have seen. Those money trucks, you know the ones, the bank trucks full of money. Gooch says that's his dream car, one of those money trucks. He says it all the time. Give me one of those for my birthday, Vreeby, fully loaded. Then he punches me in the arm to make sure I got the joke, which I always do, fully loaded, like he means full of money.
Fantasy and I had been using the time to think. She said,
"We have to figure out what happened to the caregiver before we hand over the dog, which means we need housekeeping."
"How is housekeeping going to help?" I asked.
"They can bring turf, a mile of it. You know what I think would be a good idea?" Vree asked. "Find one of those money trucks, steal it, then drive it to Houston."
"Vree," Fantasy said, "keep your day job. You'd never be a good criminal. We wouldn't make it 10 feet in a bank truck." "What are we going to do with turf?" I asked.
"I don't really have a day job," Vree said. "Set it up on your balcony or something," Fantasy said. "This is a big dog. He's going to need to go out."
"For sure," Vree said. "There's a service in Montgomery just for dog owners who live in apartments with balconies. I think most apartments have balconies. Newer apartments do for sure. The company is Pup Pup Lawn."
Fantasy stopped her.
"Has anyone ever hit you over the head with a shovel, Vree?"
"What? No! Why would someone hit me over the head with a shovel? If someone was swinging a shovel, I'd get out of their way. A shovel! That's it! We could bury the lady in your backyard, Fantasy. Take turns digging, drop the old lady in there, and then take Harley back and get the money."
Fantasy asked me if I had a shovel. "No, I don't have a shovel. Why would I have a shovel?" She was right, though, and not that we should hit Vree over the head with a shovel. She was right that we needed to know what happened to the caregiver before we returned Harley. We needed a little time, and time was something we had very little of. She had to clock in and be downstairs for the first round of the Deputy Dog Slot Tournament, followed by the first round of the dog show competition, which I also had to be downstairs for. Either of us not being where we were supposed to be would be the same as dragging No Hair and Baylor into it, and two of us hiding a dead body and a wanted dog were enough. Turf on the balcony it was.
"Mrs. Cole," the housekeeping supervisor answered, "how can I help you?"
"I called yesterday." She clicked on a keyboard. "I see that. The two men you sent, I need them back, and I need them to stop by landscaping on the way."
"I didn't send any men," she said.
"You did. They were here."
"I see where you called, Mrs. Cole. Nuclear waste spill, straight bleach, but I also see where the work order was transferred."
"By whom to where?"
"That I don't know."
"Two men from housekeeping came to my home."
"They weren't my men," she said. "I'm not sure what happened. I saw the work order transferred to another department, but I don't know which one. I have you calling and placing the order. Then 12 minutes later, before I could dispatch anyone, the work order was gone. If those men weren't from housekeeping, where were they from? Where were they, period? The last time I saw them, they were on their way to repossess Bootsy. Had Bootsy Howard done something to those men? In the 2 minutes it took the housekeeping supervisor to unravel my life just a little further, Princess did it again. She tunneled out of the pop and play. 1 minute she was in it. The next she was out, and between Bexley and Quinn. I held my breath. Fantasy held me back. They sat across from each other on the floor, four many Melissa Mary Janes touching, their little legs forming a diamond. Princess ran in it, from one to the other. They raced, they played hide-and-seek, they traded toys. I drew the line at thumbprint cookie-sharing. The three of them were having the time of their lives. The three of us, me, Fantasy, and Vree, not so much. Then Princess kept us up half the night. It was going to be a long week. Monday morning, bleary-eyed, we gathered over breakfast on the terrace. Three women, two toddlers, one Harley, and one Princess. Fruit parfaits, whole grain waffles, canine natural lamb feast, and manicotti extra sauce. She's been dead 20 hours. Fantasy checked her watch. That we know of. There's been a dead body in my house for 20 hours. We've got to do something.
Do you think she'd fit in the refrigerator?
Vree asked. Fantasy and I just looked at her. If you took out all the shelves and vegetable bins, like when you clean your refrigerator, I mean... Still, we just stared. Vree shrugged an apology. We need to call the police before they call us, I said. Our prints are all over that room.
It's my house, Davis.
Fantasy poured more coffee, then passed the carafe to me.
We can explain our prints.
You checked her for a pulse, Fantasy. How are we supposed to explain your prints on her neck?
All the more reason to get her out of my bonus room.
I poured, then passed the coffee to Vree. We need to know if she died of natural causes or something less natural.
Like Bootsy.
Vree poured. Bex and Quinn said, Boo, boo, boo.
Bootsy must have cast a death spell on her, Vree said. How will we know? I mean, it's not like we can ask her, Lady, did you have a stroke or did Bootsy do this to you?
Which is why we need a doctor, I said.
A doctor we have dirt on,
Fantasy added.
A dirty doctor?
Vree said.
How about a crazy doctor? Without work, don't come to Pineapple sick, Fantasy. I'll tell you that right now. Our doctor is deranged. One time...
Let's say we had a dirty doctor, I said. What would we do with him, her, it? The woman's already dead.
We'd have him, her, or it determine the cause of death,
Fantasy said.
That way we'd know which direction to take. If she died of natural causes, we call it in and be done with it. If she died of unnatural causes, well, that's a different story.
Altogether, I said.
What would be so different? Vree asked. Isn't she dead either way?
The difference is, if she was murdered, we'll be suspects numbers 1, 2, and 3, Fantasy said. How's that? I asked.
Because there's a price on her head, Davis, and we have the dog.
which makes us look twice as guilty. It will look like we killed her for the reward money. The police will start digging and figure out fast we actually need the reward money.
She pointed at me.
Suspect.
She pointed at Vree.
Suspect.
She turned her finger on herself.
Suspect.
Vree said,
then we should blow up your bonus room.
Fantasy and I looked at her again.
I mean, you know, get rid of the evidence.
Still, we just stared.
Don't you watch CSI, Vree?
Fantasy asked.
There is no getting rid of evidence. The woman has teeth. You can't blow up teeth.
Vree ran her tongue along her teeth.
Well, how can I help?
You're helping with the dogs, I said. That's enough. Let us worry about the rest, unless you have $1 million. Vree sighed. Fantasy tapped her chin. I wondered what my life as a divorced single parent would be like after Bradley found out.
Let's do this,
Fantasy said.
Let's deal with the dead woman first. After that, we'll go straight to work on the Meredith situation. I say, as far as priorities go, the dead woman in my bonus room trumps the live sister in Houston.
It was familiar territory for me. I was the mother of twins who often needed my immediate attention in the exact same way at the exact same time. I was torn the same way then, forced to choose between concentrating my energy in my sister's direction and giving the woman in Fantasy's bonus room the respect she deserved.
What about Bootsy?
Vree asked. Bex and Quinn said,
Boo! Boo! Boo!
We'll get to her after the dead woman and Meredith,
Fantasy said. I covered my face with my hands and talked through them.
We're in so much trouble.
We're not in trouble yet, Fantasy said. We didn't kill the lady. All we did was find her. We're just not going to say when we found her. And we'll hit the slipper for the money to save Meredith, at which point, Davis, we'll be in trouble.
Who are we going to hit?
Vree asked.
What?
Fantasy said.
What are we going to hit?
We're going to hit Silver Slipper, a casino up the street.
I came out from behind my hands. We don't even have time to hit the slipper. We'd have to do surveillance first. It would take days of watching how they move the money to find a way in, if they even have one. I haven't heard of a slipper heist as long as I've been in Biloxi, which says to me they know what they're doing.
Then we hit the last resort,
Fantasy said. The last resort probably doesn't even have $1 million.
What is the last resort?
Vree asked.
The name says it all,
Fantasy said.
Are we really going to rob a casino?
Vree asked.
Like machine guns and ski masks? Why don't we talk Meredith out of giving her blood away instead? Would that be cheaper? Like, not cost $1 million?
Meredith doesn't want to be talked out of it, I said. She wants us to come up with the money and loan it to Gully. She's convinced he's going to pay us back.
Where is Meredith?
Fantasy asked. In a suite at the Four Seasons close to the hospital.
Bubs!
Vree collapsed into a sob.
Go. I'd made the offer 9 times the day before, and I felt certain my 10th offer just then wouldn't be the last.
I can make 1 phone call and have you in Houston in an hour, Vree.
I can't leave you like this, Davis.
She's right, Fantasy said.
Who'd take care of the dogs? I don't know a thing about dogs. What do you know about dogs, Davis?
I have to stay and help, Vree said. At least until we find Bootsy, because if we don't find Bootsy, Gooch will be furious with me one time, Bootsy.
Bex and Quinn said, Boo, boo, boo.
See, Fantasy? Vree pointed at the high chairs. They're babies, and even they think Bootsy is a witch.
No, they don't, I said. They're trying to say her name. And we were right back where we started. In 48 hours, the only thing we'd really accomplished was relocating Meredith and Bubbles, so we were breathing. But we still had no idea what to do about or with the dead body, what to do about or with the dogs, where Bootsy was, who the housekeepers worked for, and we certainly didn't have $1 million. 12. Bradley called a half hour later. He sneezed, I blessed him, then he said,
How are things?
Quiet. I didn't lie. It was quiet in the kitchen pantry, which was where I hid to take his call. It was anything but quiet outside of the pantry. After breakfast, we made a chore list. Locating Bootsy was the easiest, so we tracked Fantasy's iPad again, only to find Bootsy had turned the Volvo around. Fantasy's Find My iPad app pinged a dot in Mandeville, Louisiana, headed east. We were east. Was Bootsy coming back to Biloxi? Was there something here she'd forgotten to sprinkle death dust on? If she wasn't on her way to Houston, where in the world was she on her way to? Since we didn't have a clue, we moved on to our next item, the procurement of a refrigerated storage unit for temporary dead body storage until we could determine cause of death, because at the time it seemed like the right thing to do. We couldn't just leave the poor woman in Fantasy's easy chair, nor could we find a refrigerated storage unit that wasn't smack dab in the middle of downtown Biloxi, where there were webcams on every corner, and we didn't need documentation of us hauling a dead body into a refrigerated storage unit. So we started a new search for a refrigerated truck.
Like an ice cream truck? Vree asked. I love ice cream trucks. Remember when we were little, Davis, and...
We'd wasted the half hour before that, racking our brains for a doctor, a medical examiner, an EMT, a mortician, or even a Girl Scout with her corpse badge, who owed us a favor, couldn't drum one up, which looped us back to temporarily relocating the caregiver's body. Just until we could take care of a few other pressing matters. The vote was 2-1. Fantasy wanted the dead woman out of her bonus room, and Vree sided with her.
I mean, gross.
I didn't want dead body charges on my record, so I voted no. Fantasy said,
Not reporting her death, if we're caught, is a misdemeanor, a $50 fine at most, unless she's a public threat, and I don't see a dog's caregiver as any kind of public threat. I see it as a private threat. Very private, like in my bonus room private.
I argued not reporting the body was one thing, but moving it was quite another. Moving it would constitute abuse of a corpse. Far past a misdemeanor, very against the law, up to a year in prison, not to mention wrong, just wrong, using phrases like, everything good and decent and right in the world. When my phone rang, it's Bradley. I jumped up and made a run for the pantry. Everyone try to be quiet.
Quiet? It's never quiet, he said. It couldn't possibly be quiet with Meredith's friend there, Davis. What's going on?
Blood swaps. Dead bodies. Witches. Lost dogs and ice cream trucks. I thought it best to steer our conversation in a different direction. The dog show is going on, and Bex and Quinn love it.
Jeremy tells me two dogs didn't register. Vreeze is one of them.
I should have chosen a different direction. If No Hair told him Vreeze's dog wasn't in the show, then he told him Hiridi Alabasov's wasn't either. A subject I most definitely did not want to discuss with my husband, considering Hiridi Alabasov's dog